More bombings in Damascus. Is Syria headed to civil war in spite of the UN ceasefire? Clashes between pro and anti-Assad groups in northern Lebanon, and news of a group of Lebanese pilgrims abducted by anti-government armed groups in Syria. Is the Syrian violence spilling over into its neighboring country? And is there a deliberate attempt to do just that? I'm Homa Lezgi, and this is News Analysis.
Anti-government Syrian groups have become more violent in recent weeks, despite a UN Arab League ceasefire. Deadly bomb blasts against security forces have become frequent. The latest incident occurred in Damascus when an explosive device went off in a restaurant, killing five people. A newly released video shows corpses of army soldiers who've been apparently killed during clashes with armed gangs. More has come out on the role of Washington and its regional allies in fueling the unrest. Reports say U.S. President Barack Obama has given the go-ahead to Qatar and Saudi Arabia to send anti-tank missiles to opposition forces. Debka File, which is widely believed to have links with Israeli intelligence services, says Riyadh and Doha have provided the state-of-the-art weapons to Syrian gangs. Meanwhile, anti-Syria activists in Lebanon got a moral boost after the release on bail of Salafi cleric Shadi al-Molawi. He's an outspoken critic of Syrian President Bashar al-Assad. He's believed to have played an active role in the arming and training of anti-Syria forces.
The head of general security in Lebanon said that his arrest was made after the Lebanese were given intelligence tips from Western sources, not from pro-Syrian sources, but from Western intelligence presumed to be the CIA. So when there are these outside bodies involved, many people say that there should be no doubt that Molawi is in fact affiliated with terrorist groups and affiliated with Al Qaeda.
The UN Undersecretary General for Peacekeeping has visited Syria to assess the deployment of the observers monitoring the UN-backed truce. Herr Vlatsus has confirmed that terrorist groups are operating in the Arab nation.
There is a third element, or there are third elements. And these people are not committed to the cause of the Syrian people. They are committed to their own agenda. So we have to keep a watchful eye.
Damascus says terrorist attacks have increased since the announcement of the ceasefire last month. It has accused the West of resorting to every option that would lead to the total failure of the ceasefire. Many analysts have warned against such efforts, which could eventually drag the country into a civil war.
Joining me now, live from London, Mr. Ammar Waqaf with the Syrian Social Club, also with us live from Beirut, Mr. Jihad Murakada, a political analyst, and with us live from Washington, Mr. Webster Griffin, Tarpley author and historian. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us. My first question to our guest in London, I'd like to put, Mr. Waqaf, bloody clashes in northern Lebanon. Syria's UN envoy Bashar Jafari says the region is becoming a safe haven for armed opposition groups. It's becoming a regional channel, he says, through which the armed gangs are receiving their weapons. How true do you find this claim?
Well, there have been claims. Good evening, first of all. Well, there have been claims since the very beginning, really, that since the very beginning of the Syrian crisis, that the northern Salafi base in Lebanon has a lot to do with what was happening in Syria, especially in the areas of around Banias and the Syrian coastal cities, and later on, obviously, in Homs, there had been a lot of reports about smuggling of arms and weaponry, even men, later journalists, of course. We've seen them cross the borders with their cameras through Tel Kalah and Al Arida border towns. In a sense, this has been going on for a while now, and everybody has been keeping a blind eye towards it. But however, with the capture of the Lutfallah ship coming from Libya to northern Lebanon, this thing came suddenly to the open, and everybody was sure, and there was an evidence for the first time that indeed there were weapons taking their way through northern Lebanon towards Syria.
Right. Mr. Murakata, Is there, however, a serious and real threat now of the Syrian violence spilling over into Lebanon? And is there a concerted effort to create a sectarian divide in Lebanon? This is what a lot of observers inside of Lebanon have been saying. And what would it mean for Lebanon if its northern part does become a safe haven and a base for armed groups fighting the Syrian government?
There are many questions. First of all, with regards to Lebanon, certainly there is a problem, the danger of a civil strife spilling over. However, the politicians in Lebanon are being very wise about the whole thing. As Sayyid Hassan Nasrallah today reacted, the Secretary General of Hezbollah reacted with regards to the hostages taken in Syria. He made sure that everybody goes back to its home and so on. So, in a way, the Lebanese leadership is trying to calm things down every now and then just to make sure that civil strife does not happen. There are people, unfortunately, who are spilling oil on the fire, and this happens in all conflicts. Now, with regards to the arming of the Syrian opposition groups, certainly there are people in Lebanon who have certain sympathies with regards to Syrian opposition groups, and they are sending weapons to them, but this is not only from Lebanon. Weapons are also coming through Turkey or Iraq and everywhere else. The problem is that the Syrian government has decided to focus on Lebanon, and we can see a very specific campaign led by the Syrian government, first by Mr. Mokdad, the deputy foreign minister, a week ago, then with Mr. Jafari at the United Nations. It looks pretty much like an orchestrated thing by the Syrian government.
Right. Well, I'll come back to those claims. Yeah, Mr. Murakada, of course, of who is behind arming the Syrian groups. We've, of course, heard Syria not just accusing what it says are forces or foreign forces in Lebanon, but also in Turkey, Qatar, or Saudi Arabia. But first, let's go to Washington. Our guest, Dr. Tarpley, waiting by there. Mr. Tarpley, U.S. Congressman Joseph Lieberman has visited the northern Lebanese region. He's met with Mustaqbal MPs and also Syrian refugees there. What basically are these visits about?
Well, Lieberman, of course, is a leading warmonger. He's one of the three amigos with John McCain and Lindsey Graham. And this is the constant chorus for immediate war, whatever the issue or whatever the part of the world may be. Lieberman has said that the Obama regime is now inching closer to an attack on Syria. There are some indications. We have some changes in the National Security Council. Some warmongers have moved up. Some people who are not so sure have moved down. And we've also got an article in the Washington Post a couple of days ago trying to build the case that the Syrian alleged chemical weapons stocks of nerve gas and sarin have to be seized. So if Syria seems to be in danger of disintegrating, the US and NATO forces would rush in and seize areas perhaps as large as a province. But I think we should focus on this northern Lebanon story. Right. I see here the hand of NATO, not the Syrian government at all. This is NATO. We've had Jeffrey Feldman, the U.S. Undersecretary or Assistant Secretary for the Middle East, in negotiations with people in the Lebanese government. The United States would like to get a base in northern Lebanon. They'd like to have Tripoli, and they would like to have a military airfield. There's an underused airport near Tripoli, which would be perfect for this purpose. That would then allow them to pursue aggressive designs vis-a-vis Syria. It would also allow them to counteract the Russian naval base at Tartus. So it seems to me we've got a situation where, because of the election in Syria with the 51% turnout, because of the fact that the opposition, the Syrian Free Army, is obviously terrorists, right? They're using terrorist tactics. Because of the Syrian National Council breaking up, continued squabbling there, the rebellion that NATO would like to stoke inside Syria is going nowhere. So they try to expand it. They tried to get Turkey to come in. It hasn't worked. Nobody else coming in. So I think they'd like to spread it to Lebanon and see if new options for destabilization open up that way.
So basically, Mr. Tarpley, you're speaking about the broader interests or plans that the United States or Western countries would be following in the case of Syria. Let's go back to London, I guess, there. Mr. Waqaf, there is news that the U.S. is sending the latest generation of its anti-tank missiles to Qatar and Saudi Arabia, and that those weapons are meant to be transferred from there to the Syrian armed opposition. Now, the question is, how can these countries, the United States, Qatar, Saudi Arabia, at the same time they voice support for Kofi Annan's peace plan, the ceasefire, and they're also giving arms to the rebels? Is this, do you agree there, a part of the broader plan to actually work against the ceasefire?
Well, I don't think anyone has really believed that the Kofi Annan plan could achieve any ceasefire whilst there are countries that are publicly really saying that no, we are going to continue to support the opposition with weaponry, and we're going to continue to support them. I think that it seems that there is a certain faction in the West that is viewing Syria at the moment like they viewed Afghanistan in the 1980s, where for them there is a Russian-backed government, they view it this way, and that there is enough resentment on the ground that we can actually send certain weaponry, like the Stinger rockets that they sent to Afghanistan. We can now send anti-tank missiles. I think the DEPCA file today spoke about Cornet E's and Milans, and so on. Even you have the neo-Charlie Wilsons, the congressman or senator, I cannot really remember, in the shape of Lieberman and McCain, doing the same thing, visiting refugee camps across the border from Syria and saying that we should, you know, taking the moral high ground and we should fight with these people and take, you know, provide them with all the help they need in order to counter this vicious government. So in a sense, a similar scenario to what happened in Afghanistan in the 1980s perhaps is being now prepared for Syria for a prolonged period of engagement. I think, in a sense, everybody must have realized now that it's not going to be easy to attack Syria just like they did with Libya or Iraq. The Syrian army is intact. It hasn't collapsed. It still has a lot of strategic capability to upset the apple cart. The Russians are clearly backing Syria on this matter. So the only way is for DK from inside, and the Saudis and the Qataris, because they view this as an opportunity to increase their sphere of geopolitical influence in the region, they're going to grab at it.
Right. Mr. Murakada, a comparison there made there, I guess, to Afghanistan. I'd like to put this question to our guest in Beirut. The U.S. Secretary of Defense, Leon Panetta, and James Clapper, Director of the National Intelligence, have talked about the presence of al-Qaeda in Syria. And at the same time, of course, Washington is supplying intelligence, money, weapons to the armed groups that are fighting the Syrian government, and those include al-Qaeda. So why is the U.S. arming al-Qaeda, and is it making the same mistake that it made two decades ago in Afghanistan?
First of all, I would like to draw a distinction that your two other guests, and generally speaking, the information process has not really drawn, which is the Syrian government is just one part of Syria, and the opposition is the other part of Syria. This distinction has been made by the UN Security Council, and which includes Russia and China, which approved it, because the Kofi Annan plan talks about two sides, the Syrian government and the opposition. So in a way, when the Syrian government is being armed by Russia, it is only normal for the opposition to be armed by other people. You continue to think in terms that the opposition are rebels and the Syrian government is a legitimate government. The Syrian government has lost its legitimacy the day the Kofi Annan plan has been agreed. It has legitimacy in the sense that when you go to the airport, you've got the Syrian government, okay? But when you go to other areas, you do not have the Syrian government. So in a way, I would tend to say that the Syrian government is equal to the opposition, and whatever the Syrian government does or gets in terms of weapons, in terms of support and so on, the opposition is allowed to exactly the same support because they are equal partners in the Kofi Annan plan.
Right. If I could just get a reaction.
On the other hand, when you are talking about al-Qaeda, Yes, of course. You have Al-Qaeda in Syria, and the American government is not arming Al-Qaeda. The American government is arming, first of all, it is not arming. It's giving communication equipment and sophisticated equipment and probably anti-tank missiles that you talked about a while earlier through Saudi Arabia and Qatar, which is fine. Okay, but on the other hand, is it in Afghanistan? No way, I do not think so. It will only become an Afghanistan if everybody in the area wants it to become an Afghanistan, and nobody in the area does, and none of the foreign powers, including Russia, China, or America and Europe, want it to become an Afghanistan.
Right. Dr. Tarpley, would you agree there that we should view the opposition, in our guess words there, and the Syrian government on equal terms when we say, well, the opposition should be armed because the Syrian government is being supported, that justifies giving arms to the opposition? Tell us your view on that, and also if you agree that the United States is actually not giving arms to Al-Qaeda.
I would say, first of all, the principle that the Syrian ragtag, terrorist-ridden, divided opposition is somehow equal to the Syrian government, that is a principle that leads straight to anarchy and the collapse of civilization as we have known it. There can be no such proposition in international law. That is, I think, absolutely antithetical to the interests of humanity. Now,
Mr.
The U.S.,
Griffin,
of course, has been arming these rebels,
said it. It's not me.
Such as they are, from the very beginning. You'll get your chance. The U.S. has been arming them from the very beginning, and precisely through this area of Tripoli, right? Banyas was mentioned, Homs, Hama. Why are those places rising in rebellion? Because that's where the rat line goes through for the NATO arms deliveries from Cyprus and other places.
Of course, Mr. Griffin,
Milan,
you think this
missiles,
way, the other things
modern
are the
NATO,
others are the rats.
Metis missiles have been delivered, maybe not Cornet, but similarly. Now, let's also look at the big picture. Last week at St. Petersburg, Prime Minister Medvedev made a remarkable statement saying that the Western desire to meddle in the affairs of sovereign states leads to regional wars, and then he said, quite possibly, to nuclear war. That is what we're looking at here. This is a very serious matter. It's not Libya. The great powers are immediately implicated in this. We've just had an official of the Russian foreign ministry quoted in the Chinese news agency stressing again that there are circles in the West who believe that this idea of intervening, invading countries is a live option. Now, the NATO summit, of course, claims they're not going to do it. Rasmussen and the U.S. ambassador to NATO, Dalder, say, no, who us? We're not going to invade anybody. But I think what the Russians are saying seems to reflect Russian intelligence that there is such a proposal or plan that's being readied.
Right. Before we go back to Beirut with his response, I'd just like to get comments from my guest in London. Mr. Wakoff, looking at the part that speaks about the democratic, rather, demands of the Syrian people, where does that stand now? Some may argue that those aspirations have been hijacked by states that have gotten involved in this, including the Persian Gulf Arab states or the United States, etc., Turkey, Lebanon. So basically, do you think that's the case?
I think it is the case. This has been hijacked immediately when regional players spotted an opportunity with the Syrian uprising and really jumped into the action very early on. And that effectively killed the Syrian uprising or any calls for meaningful reform, in a sense. But I would like to go back to the discussion that has been taking place so far in the past 5 minutes. First of all, the Annan peace plan does speak about a Syrian-led solution. And when they speak about a Syrian-led solution, obviously not they do not mean that the opposition are going to be any part of it. The Syrian government is the one with which Kofi Annan and the United Nations made the protocol. And, you know, the international community and the Friends of Syria have been using all their trickery to try and combine whatever groups of opposition, Syrian oppositions, together. But no one is taking them lightly, because this is just neither happening, nor is it going to happen, or seems going to happen. Right. With regards to the arming of the Syrian government, the Syrian government is buying Yakhunt missiles. These are aimed at NATO ships to keep them away 300 miles away, not against the Syrian people and the Syrian population, really. Yak-130s from Russia, these are light interceptors and training fighters. These are not to fight civilians. So the argument that, we should need to arm the opposition because the Syrian army is getting all the weaponry in the world is really flawed. Mm. But going back to the democracy, yes, going back to your question, it has been hijacked. And since day one, because everybody wanted the Syrian government down. And this is the main point. Nobody really cares about the prosperity of the Syrian people. Nobody really cares about reducing the bloodshed in Syria.
If I may, unfortunately, we're running short of time, and I'd just like to get the comments from Mr. Murakada there. Mr. Murakada, looking at the situation right now, those who are for this rather foreign intervention or Assad going, we want to ask the question, if Assad does go, what will a post-Assad Syria be looking at? A foreign intervention, civil war, is that the solution for Syria?
It all depends how Mr. Assad goes and if he goes. It is really up to President Assad to organize a transition to the new democratic forces in Syria. I'm sorry to say that democracy does not exist under Mr. Assad. It doesn't matter how many people vote, contrary to a gentleman in London. So, no, you need to move on to a new democracy. I hope that Mr. Assad will make the right transfer to a new regime without any bloodshed. If he goes with the right transfer, there will not be any bloodshed. If there is a coup d'etat, for example, well, the Baath Party or some people could go. If there is an open war, then yes, it will be civil war.
Right.
But it is in the hands of President Bashar al-Assad at the end of the day, who will decide if he has enough credibility left, which way to go, things should
right.
go.
Right. Mr. Murakada, I'll just stop you there and get the conclusion remarks now by Dr. Tarpley in Washington. Dr. Tarpley, basically, let's see, is Syria now in a situation that Assad should go? Is that the only solution? I guess they're saying that there's no democracy in Syria, but does that mean that countries like Qatar or Saudi Arabia, which are also lacking, of course, in democratic norms, should get involved and bring democracy there?
Certainly, there's more democracy in Syria now than there was before the recent election, which now has the multi-party election, which these oppositionists chose to boycott because they knew they would lose big. We have the following situation. We have the new television channel, the Sky News for Arabia. And this is Rupert Murdoch, who has been pronounced by the British Parliament unworthy to hold a broadcasting license. And we've got some sheikh from Abu Dubai in the Emirates, who are, of course, all absolute monarchies, no democracy there. And they're putting out the line. Rupert Murdoch and his friend in Dubai are pushing the line that Assad is worse than Hitler. Well, as a historian, I will be pleased to debate anybody they put up that the NATO destabilization of Syria is practically identical to what Hitler did to Czechoslovakia. So I don't know about worse than Hitler, but strikingly similar to Hitler, we can say, right, is NATO and not Assad.
Right. I'm afraid we've run out of time. A big thank you there to Dr. Webster Griffin Tarpley, author and historian, joining us there live from Washington. Also, I'd like to thank Mr. Jihad Murakada, political analyst with us from Beirut. And a big thank you to our guest in London with the Syrian Social Club, Mr. Ammar Awakaf. Thank you very much for being with us. From me, Homa Dezghi, and the rest of the team here in Tehran, it's goodbye.